Welcome to episode 54. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup, and in particular with regards to community health. Community health bargaining is still at a critical juncture. We are focusing in particular with respect to the medical scientists and health and allied bargaining. A full update will be provided in writing to members ahead of next week's monthly HRIR managers meeting. That meeting promises to be a critical discussion with regards to the progress of bargaining for community health. With respect to our public health sector members, we are currently working through some issues with respect to long service leave. Thank you to all those members who have provided additional scenarios for us to work through. We may provide additional material through a podcast, as well as materials following discussions with the ANMF. We are still experiencing some challenges with regards to some clauses of the agreements, in particular Clause 93 of the Nurses and Midwives Agreement, and an assertion that with respect to adopting an 8-8-10 roster, that would require a vote. We'll be updating members as that particular dispute continues through to its resolution. And we are still experiencing some issues with regards to Clause 91 of the Allied Health Professionals Agreement and an assertion with respect to the Advertising and Vacancies Clause, in particular an assertion that the internal process must first be exhausted. We remain concerned that that particular interpretation and the extreme nature of it will have adverse impacts on allied health professionals, particularly in rural and regional areas. Thank you to all those members who participated in one of our rural and regional forums and those who provided a response to the needs analysis. As always, our activities are updated through the VHAA community app. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. Today we're putting the spotlight on one of our regional members, Maryborough District Health Service, and some of the work that they're doing, particularly with respect to workforce development. This podcast is being recorded live at the Maryborough District Health Service, and we're joined today by Nicola Allen, Director of Clinical Services. Good afternoon, Nicola.
Good afternoon.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
So for those who are watching and who may not be familiar with Maryborough, can you tell people a little bit about the town and the population here?
Sure. So our local population is around 8,000, but as a health service, we service about 15,000 across our little region that we have.
So you have a centred population of about 8,000, but a geographically dispersed population to service as well?
Yep.
And I think one of the highlights of this area is its fairly spectacular railway station.
It's beautiful.
Legend has it was meant to go to Maryborough in Queensland.
I'm not sure if the rumours are absolutely confirmed on that, but it's certainly an impressive bit of architecture that really frames the town.
What I can say, I think it is one of the few railway stations that Mark Twain listed as one of his favourites. So I grew up down on the Mornington Peninsula, and Mark Twain had nothing to say about the Frankston Railway Station.
No, he didn't. My father's from Cannanook, so I know the area well.
And in terms of notable citizens from the Maryborough area, I had a little bit of a look. So I came up with three.
Mm-hmm.
I found Matthew Dellavedova,
yep,
current basketball player.
Dellavedova is in the lane. It's good. Dellavedova in double figures.
Robbie Chater from the Avalanches.
Mm-hmm.
And also Philip Adams, who's an ABC broadcaster and, according to Wikipedia, is a public intellectual.
Ooh.
So I guess my first question is, should Philip Adams stop editing his own Wikipedia page?
Always a good start, I think. A bit of bias, never hurt anybody. Jim Jess from Avoca.
Absolutely. As a local health service, I take it that Maryborough District Health Service is one of the larger employers within town?
Yes, absolutely.
And I wanted to discuss some of the things that have been occurring here, and particularly where we're seated at the moment,
mm-hmm,
which is the Centre of Inspired Learning, which is a recently opened facility for education and training.
Mm-hmm.
Could you describe what it is that COIL, or the Centre of Inspired Learning, will be doing?
So the Centre of Inspired Learning was really a concept design a couple of years ago to really provide a simulated learning environment where our staff could really grow their skills. We could really put learning into action as opposed to the classical, I suppose, sense of how you can provide mandatory training in the Larks in a very mundane sense. So this was really, the concept was born of how we could really provide a difference in our own learning opportunities as a staff. What came from that was post Terry doing a visit, our CEO doing a visit down to our local high school, where he met with a range of Year 10 and 11 students, where 85% of the girls there all wanted to be hairdressers. And it took him by surprise, and he couldn't help but he had to ask, what is it about hairdressing that makes you want to go down that path? And the overwhelming response was, we don't have to leave town. So that got him thinking, what can we do differently as an organisation to provide hope and opportunity for our local students and our youth? How can we provide pathways for learning opportunities to grow our own staff, provide a career path from allied health, nursing, not just from a clinical setting, but also how can we work with our hotel services team, our building and services team, to really make it an organisational commitment to learning and innovation and growth within our local community.
So you touched upon a couple of different things there, one of which was providing a place for your existing staff to further their development in a purpose-built environment.
Yep.
The facility has two main areas within it. Mm-hmm. You talked about a simulated learning environment, and there is a would you call it a mock ward?
So it's essentially set up with a three-bed bay, which replicate the actual acute ward in the health service. So from an orientation perspective, when we have our students here, but also for new staff, there's a familiarity already by the time you get out onto the ward, because you've stepped into the ward in reality within the COIL centre, which then we can do some filmed activities as well, and the equipment's mimicked, so our pumps are the same, our monitors are the same, and then if you get the opportunity to be engaged in some of the simulated learning, you can then watch yourself back within the little lecture room off the side.
Does that mean your peers can also watch you as you undertake work in the simulated environment?
Yes, that's exactly right, which can be a little bit confronting.
So in terms of the existing staff, and in particular, there is that handover period of time. Will the education opportunities be utilised during that handover time or at other times? How will that be structured?
Yep, so there'll be a couple of different ways to do it, but certainly that big double staffing time during the day provides opportunity where we can do some simulated mock emergencies, clinical handover, a lot of the tips and tricks that we use during our business day, but actually putting them in action. But also it'll be available for broader days of training opportunities, working with our regional partners. There's some first aid training. There's a lot of different opportunities for our staff to access training within the COIL Centre.
So we talked before about the three-bed bay and the simulated learning environment and the ability then in the second key area within the COIL Centre to watch. That area, which seems to have some sort of media component to it, does that enable people to learn or hook into learning outside of Maryborough as well?
Certainly there's opportunity to do that, absolutely, and work with our regional partners, and certainly with our external campuses at Denali and Avoca, being able to send that training and those learnings out to our satellite centres is really important. The tyranny of distance isn't an excuse anymore. We can then also upload it onto our intranet site and our learning portal, so staff can actually access that, and then who knows what the opportunities are to share it with the broader regional organisations as well.
Nicola, you mentioned before that the Terry had visited the local high school and there was a strong level of aspiration among students, particularly female students, in terms of hairdressing, and the stated reason being the ability to stay here in Maryborough.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the ability to train local staff, local people, mm-hmm. What kind of training can they undertake here at the Centre of Inspired Learning?
Certainly. So towards the middle of the year, we're embarking on our enrolled nursing course in partnership with Bendigo, TAFE and Kangan, which will provide opportunities for an enrolled nursing. There's some allied health assistant training commencing, and some Cert 3 and Cert 4 in aged care specifically, so training up that personal care workforce, which gives people the opportunity to work, and then they can enter a career path into potentially the enrolled nursing course, and then potentially further that if they wanted to pursue a career as a registered nurse. Similarly with the allied health assistants, gain that experience, get some work history, and then embark on another journey if they so choose that.
But it gives you the option then of if people are doing their training here, then you get an opportunity to bring those people into the organisation.
Absolutely.
At the appropriate time, or it gives people an opportunity to further their career somewhere else.
It does. It gives them that exposure to the health service that they probably would never have got before. So doing their placements here, getting an understanding of how it works across all the different parts of the organisation, from community services through to aged care, it really enables you to see and understand what it feels like to work in a centre such as ours.
But it's interesting in the context of developing a workforce. So the effect of what you're doing here is you're developing a workforce locally. They don't need to leave, and then you have to hope that they come back.
That's right.
You are training them locally in the hope that they will continue to work here.
That's exactly right.
And so I understand it's only just recently been opened in a broad sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you had the Minister for Health do the honours?
Yes, Minister Hennessy was here a couple of weeks ago, and certainly was very impressed with the facility and hadn't seen anything quite like it, particularly in an organisation our size, and then also really gave us the ability to then embark on our journey of building our student accommodation, which will further enhance that methodology of people being able to stay locally, stay on site and train as well.
So just in terms of that announcement that was made during the Minister's recent visit to open the centre, just the details of that announcement.
So Minister Hennessy, we were very overwhelmed with the grant of $4.1 million. So that's going to enable us to upgrade our kitchen, but also build a 20-bed student accommodation on site at the health service. So almost taking us back to the nursing home type days, but it will have some purpose-built accommodation for our medical interns, as well as our nursing and allied health students that come through the organisation. So for those people who can't afford, you know, there's limited accommodation across really Maryborough at the minute, but certainly from a rental perspective. But then that short-term accommodation, how do people actually stay, train, work? There's nothing like that in town. So we're really, really excited to begin the journey.
I think the Minister's announcement referred to it as a flagship facility. That's always a good sign.
Yeah.
If you've been referred to as a flagship facility.
Yeah, we're really excited. I think what this does is it gives our youth, certainly, and not just the youth. I've had conversations with people down at the local supermarket saying how now their mum's thinking of what they can do to further themselves now that their kids have, you know, got through school. So it's giving much broader than just the student, our youth. It's actually giving the whole community some opportunities and some pathways for education and training.
So you'll be developing and building up a workforce locally, both through the training opportunities here, but also with respect to the additional accommodation, which will be a draw card for people to do their study.
Absolutely.
Locally.
Yep.
In terms of some of the other things that are happening here at Maryborough at the moment, I understand that you've made some changes with respect to your aged care.
Yes, so we've just embarked at Wattle Rise, which was formerly known as our Maryborough Nursing Home. So by doing the Montessori program, which is all about enablement and promoting independence in the aged care setting, so we have gone away from the traditional institutional name as the nursing home, and we've renamed, which was launched in November last year, to calling it Wattle Rise. Now, Wattle's very symbolic with our local region.
Yes.
And we are up on a hill, so Wattle Rise was voted on by staff and the consumers and their families within the nursing home to become Wattle Rise, as it's formally known today. And it's a beautiful facility.
We're accustomed to talking about aged care in the context of remembering that it's somebody's home, but as I understand it, the Montessori principles take that concept a lot further.
They do. It's all about not taking away from people. It's actually allowing them to do what they can. So mealtimes are a really good example, having, you know, the ability for residents to see and smell the food and take their time to eat. It's not at, when we say it's the formal, you know, 9 o'clock, it's breakfast time. Residents can choose when to get out of bed, they can choose when to have their breakfast, they can choose what time they finish their lunch. There's less of that historical, which nurses are very, very good at, in being routine-driven and everything's by the clock. So it's really flipped that on its head. It's really enabling. And what we've found is that the relationships between the residents and the staff have just grown. And we've had residents actually, through the Montessori program, even grow their skills, and some have actually gone home to live with their families again, which wasn't seen as an option when they first entered our aged care.
It's usually regarded as a one-way transaction.
It is, absolutely. So I've got three stories over the three different campuses, actually, where we've had residents return home post the Montessori program being implemented.
And I also understand that you're sort of embarking on some changes and implementing changes in terms of the nurse practitioner model within your urgent care centre.
Absolutely. We've worked heavily with our local GPs to develop a model to reduce the burden of on-call for them. So our GPs have historically worked a 24/7 roster 7 days a week across our local two practices.
Which should not be an uncommon experience for rural and regional settings.
No, but what we've heard from our GPs is it's not sustainable, and recruiting into vacant positions is incredibly difficult, and the balance, that work-life balance that everybody talks so often about, is really hard for them to achieve. So we've worked with them to develop a nurse practitioner model where we have some nurse practitioners on call from a Friday through to Monday morning who act, they are extremely specialised clinicians who see everybody who needs to be seen within the urgent care centre. They arrange transfers, escalate care, liaise with the regional or metropolitan health services as required. And then the GPs have gone from being on every other weekend to a 1 in 10 on call arrangement, whereby they're that third or fourth on call sort of mechanism that if something's really going pear-shaped, for want of a better word, they can then be called in to assist. But otherwise, and we've had one instance where we've called the GP in the last 4 months since we've been up and running.
So that's a drastic change.
Huge change.
And it's an interesting solution to another workforce issue by changing the mix.
So we had to think differently. We couldn't keep heading down the traditional route because GPs don't gravitate naturally to rural Victoria, as we've found. There's an oversupply in metropolitan Melbourne, but certainly it's not the same case in rural Victoria. So we thought, what resources have we got? We've already had a nurse practitioner go through locally, which we supported through. So that's currently, our nurse practitioner works Monday to Friday during business hours, which further supports the GPs as well, because rather than the GPs having to stop their practice, come across to urgent care, review a patient, go back, which then has a knock-on effect where their appointments are running behind. And so we've tried to think differently in that space as well, and that's working really, really well from a Monday to Friday point of view.
So it diminishes the disruption that would otherwise apply.
Absolutely, and it means that the GPs are present for all of the relevant patients that are presenting through their clinic on a daily basis without the interruptions, which I know can be an issue for some of the clinics at times. The GP on call can, if there's something going on in urgent care, may disappear for 2 hours. That just has a flow-on, knock-on effect to the daily running of their business as well.
It's great to hear about the initiatives that are being implemented to develop a workforce or to deal with workforce challenges, particularly in a rural and regional setting. Thank you so much for letting us come to the Centre of Inspired Learning and to see this great new facility. I do have one more question.
Sure.
One of the things I did note is that in moving into that three-bed bay, that there was a large, somewhat lifelike-looking rubber dummy that was lying there. Mm-hmm. It's quite startling when you first see it.
It is.
And I was just wondering, has it been given a name yet?
I believe he has. I can't think of it off the top. I think, not sure if it's Vincent or the likes. He does have a name, and they do refer to him as that name. And I wouldn't be totally surprised if there's some conversations had with him as you walk past, because he does look, and he snores, he vomits. He has some very ordinary chest sounds as you walk past from time to time. So,
on that basis, if I could suggest the name Tim.
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 I liked him. It's easy to remember, much easier than Vincent.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you, Nicola.
Thank you very much.